Side 1, cassette number 28, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division E, Motion on the Plane of Mind, on page 1159. Another hint of interest lies in the fact that there exist between these spinal centers certain gaps, if I may so express it, which have, in the course of evolution, to be bridged by the energetic action of the rapidly growing vibration of the force unit. Between the triple energy of the spinal column and the ulter major center, there is a hiatus, just as there exists that which must be bridged between the triple lower man and the egoic body, or between the mental unit on the fourth subplane of the mental plane and the solar angel on the third subplane. Though we are told that the permanent atomic triad is enclosed in the causal periphery, nevertheless, from the standpoint of consciousness, there is that which must be bridged. Page 1160. Again, between the ulter major center and the supreme head center exists another gulf, a correspondence to the gulf found between the plane of the ego and the lowest point of the triad, the monastic permanent atom. When man has constructed the antiskarana, which he does during the final stages of his evolution in the three worlds, that gulf is bridged, and the monad and the ego are closely linked. When man is polarized in his mental body, he begins to bridge the antiskarana. When the center between the shoulder blades, referred to earlier in this treatise as the monastic center, is vibrating forcefully, then the ulter major center and the head center via the throat center can be united. Man, when he reaches this stage, is a creator in mental matter of a caliber different from the unconsciously working average man. He constructs in unison with the plan, and the divine Manasaputra, the son of mind, will turn his attention from being a son of power in the three worlds and center his attention in the spiritual triad, thus recapitulating on a higher turn of the spiral the work he earlier did as man. This becomes possible when the growth of the triangle just above dealt with, base of spine, ulter major center, and throat, as they unify in the head, is paralleled by another triplicity, the solar plexus, the heart, and the third eye. The energy merging through them is similarly unified in the same head center. The third eye is an energy center constructed by man. It is a correspondence to the energy center, the causal body, constructed by the monad. The ulter major center is similarly constructed by other streams of force and corresponds, interestingly, to the triple form constructed by the ego in the three worlds. When this dual work has proceeded to a certain evolutionary point, another triplicity becomes alive within the head itself as a result of these dual streams of triple energy. This triangle transmits fiery energy via the pineal gland, the pituitary body, and the ulter major center, and this reaches the head center. Page 1161. In this way, in these three triangles, we have nine streams of energy converging and passing into the highest head lotus. The correspondence to certain macrocosmical forces will here be apparent to all discerning students. We have seen the close connection between the different centers and the gradually demonstrating effects to be noted as they are linked up and eventually produce a synthetic circulatory system for egoic energy in conjunction with the energy of the lower man, which forms a kind of medium by which the egoic force makes itself felt. Macrocosmically, but little can be said which would prove intelligible to man at his present stage of evolution. Some brief statements might nevertheless be given, which, if pondered on and correlated with each other, may throw some light on planetary evolution and on the relation of the planetary logoi to the solar logos. A solar logos uses for his energy centers the planetary schemes, each of which embodies a peculiar type of energy, and each of which therefore vibrates to the key of the logoic solar angel, of which the human solar angel is a dim reflection. It is interesting here to note that as the human solar angel is a unity manifesting through three tiers of petals, the logoic correspondence is even more interesting, for that great cosmic entity demonstrates on the cosmic mental plane as a triple flame working through seven tiers of petals, and it is the energy from these seven circles of energy which pulsates through the medium of any scheme. All this is hidden in the mystery of the one about whom naught may be said, and it is not possible for men to solve it, the truth being obscure to even the highest Dihan Chohan of our system. The energy centers of the solar logos are themselves in the form of vast lotuses or wheels, at the center of which lies hidden that central cosmic life we call a planetary logos. Footnote. See Section 8, Secret Doctrine, Volume 1. The lotus is symbolical of both the macrocosm and of the microcosm. A. The seeds of the lotus contain in miniature the perfect plant. B. It is the product of fire and matter. C. It has its roots in the mud. It grows up through the water. It is fostered by the warmth of the sun. It blossoms in the air. Macrocosm. The mud, the objective physical solar system. Water, the emotional or astral nature. Flower on water, fruition of the spiritual. Method, cosmic fire or intelligence. Microcosm, the mud, the physical body. Water, emotional or astral nature. Flower on water, fruition of the Buddhic or spiritual. Method, fire of mind. Quote, the significance of the tradition that Brahma is born from or in the lotus is the same. The lotus symbolizes a world system, and Brahma dwells therein representing action. He is therefore called the Kamal Asana, the lotus seated. The lotus, again, is said to arise from or in the navel of Vishnu, because the navel of Vishnu, or all knowledge, is necessary desire, the primal form of which, as embodied in the Veda text, is, may I be born forth as multitudinous progeny. From such central and essential desire, the will to live arises the whole of becoming. All the operations, all the whirls and whorls of change and manifestation which make up life. In such becoming dwells Brahma, and from him and by him, i.e. by incessant activity, arises and manifests the organized world, the tribhuvanam, the triple world. Because first manifested, therefore is Brahma named the first of the gods. By action is manifestation, and he is the actor. And because actor, therefore is he also sometimes called the preserver or protector of the world. For he who makes a thing desires also the maintenance and preservation of his handiwork, and moreover, by the making of the thing, supplies the basis and opportunity for the operation of preservation, which in strictness, of course, belong to Vishnu. Close quote. From Pranava Vada, pages 84 and 311. Return to text, page 1162. He is the meeting place for two types of force, spiritual or logoic, which reaches him via the logoic lotus on cosmic mental planes from the seven rishis of the Great Bear on their own plane, and secondly, of Buddhic force, which is transmitted via the seven sisters or the Pleiades from a constellation called the Dragon in some books, and from which has come the appellation the Dragon of Wisdom. A third type of energy is added, and therefore can be detected in these centers, that of monastic type. This reaches the logoic centers via the star Sirius, and is transmitted from that constellation, which, as earlier I have hinted, must remain obscure at present. Page 1163. These three great streams of energy form the total manifestation of a logoic center. This is known to us as a planetary scheme. Within the planetary scheme, these streams of energy work paramountly in the following manner. A. Spiritual energy, three higher planes, the monads. B. Buddhic force, fourth plane, the solar angels. C. Manasic force, two lower planes, the four kingdoms of nature. Physical energy, the leftover of a previous solar system, demonstrates through the dense physical form and in the material which is energized during the involutionary cycle. It is not considered a principle and is regarded as the basis of Maya or illusion. The various planetary schemes are not all alike and differ as to A, type of energy, B, point in evolution, C, position in the general plan, D, karmic opportunity, E, rate of vibration. The main distinction exists in the fact, as we have so oft repeated, that three of them form the three higher etheric energy centers of the locus, and four constitute the lower centers. Saturn is of interest to us here because the locus of Saturn holds a position in the body logoic similar to that held by the throat center in the microcosm. Three centers towards the close of manifestation will become aligned in the same way as the center at the base of the spine, the throat center, and the outer major center. Here it must be pointed out that there are three planetary schemes which hold a place analogous to that held by the pineal gland, the pituitary body, and the outer major center, but they are not the schemes referred to as centers or known to us as informed by planetary logoi. Page 1164. Certain of the planetoids have their place here, and one scheme which has passed out of activity and is in a condition of quiescence and non-activity. This latter scheme is the correspondence in the logoic body to the atrophied third eye in the fourth kingdom of nature. When man has developed etheric vision and thus has expanded his range of vision, he will become aware of these facts, for he will see. Many planetary schemes which are found only in etheric matter will be revealed to his astonished gaze, and he will find that, as in the body microcosmic, there are 7 or 10 paramount centers, but numbers of other centers for the purpose of energizing various organs. So likewise the body macrocosmic has myriads of energy focal points or feeders which have their place, their function, and their felt effects. These centers, with no dense physical globe, constitute what has sometimes been called the inner round, and transmit their force through those greater centers which have been spoken of in occult books as having a connection with the inner round. Each of these planetary schemes can be seen as a lotus having 7 major petals, of which each chain forms 1 petal, but having also subsidiary petals of a secondary color according to the nature and karma of the entity concerned. It is in the enumeration of these solar lotuses that occult students go astray. It is, for instance, correct to say that the planetary scheme corresponding to the microcosmic base of the spine is a fourfold lotus and has, therefore, 4 petals. There are 4 outstanding petals of a peculiar hue, but there are 3 of a secondary color and 9 of a tertiary nature. To students with intuition, the hint here conveyed may reveal the name of the planet and the nature of its evolution. Page 1165. Each of these solar lotuses, or planetary schemes, unfolds in 3 great stages of activity, in each one of which one of the 3 types of energy dominates. As the unfolding proceeds, the vibratory activity increases, and the appearance of the manifesting activity changes. A. The motion of the lotus or wheel for a long time is simply that of a slow revolution. B. Later, for a still vaster period, each petal revolves within the greater whole and at an angle different to that of the whole revolution. C. Finally, these 2 activities are increased by the appearance of a form of energy which, originating from the center, pulsates so powerfully that it produces what look to be streams of energy passing backwards and forwards from the center to the periphery. D. When these 3 are working in unison, the effect is wonderful in the extreme, and impossible for the eye to follow, the mind of man to conceive, or the pen to express in words. It is this stage, macrocosmic and microcosmic, which constitutes the different grades of alignment, for it must never be forgotten by students that all that manifests is a sphere, and alignment really consists in unimpeded communication between the heart of the sphere and the periphery, or the bound of the influence of the dynamic will and the center. Within each planetary scheme are found the seven chains, which are the seven planetary centers, and again within the chain are the seven globes, which are the chain centers. But students would do well not to study the globes from the point of view of centers until their knowledge of the mystery underlying dense physical substance is greater, or they will be led into error. The lower down one seeks to carry the correspondence, the more the likelihood of error. The correspondence must lie in quality and in principle expressed, but not in form. Page 1166. Section 2, Division F, the Law of Attraction. Roman numeral 1, the subsidiary laws. 1, Law of Chemical Affinity. 2, Law of Progress. 3, Law of Sex. 4, Law of Magnetism. 5, Law of Radiation. 6, Law of the Lotus. 7, Law of Color. 8, Law of Gravitation. 9, Law of Planetary Affinity. 10, Law of Solar Unity. 11, Law of the Schools. Roman numeral 2, its effects. 1, association. 2, form building. 3, adaptation of form to life. 4, group unity. Roman numeral 3, group relations. 1, 3 atomic relations. 2, 7 laws of group work. 3, 22 methods of interplay. This law is, as we know, the basic law of all manifestation and the paramount law for this solar system. It might strictly be called the law of adjustment or of balance, for it conditions that aspect of electrical phenomena which we call neutral. The law of economy is the basic law of one pole, that of the negative aspect. The law of synthesis is the basic law of the positive pole. But the law of attraction is the law for the fire which is produced by the merging during evolution of the two poles. Page 1167. From the standpoint of the human being, it is that which brings about the realization of self-consciousness. From the point of view of the subhuman beings, it is that which draws all forms of life on to self-realization. Whilst in connection with the superhuman aspect, it may be stated that this law of life expands into the processes conditioned by the higher law of synthesis, of which the law of attraction is but a subsidiary branch. Strictly speaking, the law of attraction is a generic term under which are grouped several other laws similar in nature but diverse in their manifestations. It might be useful if we enumerated a few of these laws, thereby enabling the student to get, as he studies them in their totality, a broad general idea as to the law and its modifications, its spheres of influence, and the scope of its activity. It should be noted here as a basic proposition in connection with all atoms that the law of attraction governs the soul aspect. The law of economy is the law of the negative electron. The law of synthesis is the law of the positive central life, whilst the law of attraction governs that which is produced by the relation of these two, and is itself controlled by a greater cosmic law, which is the principle of the intelligence of substance. It is the law of Akasha. It must be borne in mind that these three laws are the expression of the intent or purpose of the three logoic aspects. The law of economy is the governing principle of Brahma, or the Holy Spirit. The law of synthesis is the law of the Father's life, whilst the Son's life is governed by and manifests forth divine attraction. Yet these three are the three subsidiary laws of a greater impulse, which governs the life of the unmanifested Logos. Page 1168. Roman numeral 1, the subsidiary laws. The subsidiary aspects, or laws, of the law of attraction might be enumerated as follows. 1. The law of chemical affinity. This law governs the soul aspect in the mineral kingdom. It concerns the marriage of the atoms and the romance of the elements. It serves to perpetuate the life of the mineral kingdom and to preserve its integrity. It is the cause of the immetallization of the monad. 2. The law of progress. It is called this in the vegetable kingdom owing to the fact that it is in this kingdom that definite objective response to stimulation can be noted. It is the basis of the phenomenon of sensation, which is the key to this solar system of love, our system being a sun of necessity or of desire. This law is the working out into manifestation of the informing consciousness of a part of the Deva kingdom and of certain pranic energies. The student will find much of esoteric interest in the following line of living forces. A. The second chain, globe and round. B. The vegetable kingdom. C. The devas of desire in their second reflected groupings. D. The heart of the sun. E. The second ray force. 3. The law of sex. This is the term applied to the force which brings about the physical merging of the two poles in connection with the animal kingdom and of man, viewing him as responsive to the call of his animal nature. It concerns itself with the due guarding of the form in this particular cycle and its perpetuation. It is only powerful during the period of the duality of the sexes and their separation, and in the case of man, will be offset by a higher expression of the law when man is again androgynous. It is the law of marriage, and finds some aspects of its manifestation not only in marriage of men and animals in the physical sense, but in the occult marriage of A, the soul and the spirit, page 1169, B, the sun with his mother, or the soul with the physical substance, C, the negative planetary lives with the positive ones earlier pointed out, D. The systemic marriage, or the merging of the two final planetary schemes after their absorption of the other forces. E. The cosmic marriage, or the merging of our solar system with its opposite cosmic pole, another constellation. The cosmic marriage of stars and systems is the cause of the occasional irregular flaring up or intensification of suns and their increased luminosity, which is sometimes seen, and which has frequently been the subject of discussion. 4. The law of magnetism. This is the law which produces the unifying of a personality, and though it is an expression of lunar force, is, nevertheless, of a much higher order than the law of physical sex. It is the expression of the law as it is demonstrated by the three major groups of lunar Petris. These three groups are not concerned with the building of the forms of the animal kingdom, for they are the builders of the body of man in the final three stages of the path of evolution. A. The stage of high intellectuality or of artistic attainment. B. The stage of discipleship. C. The stage of treading the path. The lower four groups concern themselves with the earlier stages and with the animal aspects of attraction in both the kingdoms. Page 1170. 5. The law of radiation. This is one of the most interesting of the laws, for it only becomes into activity in connection with the highest specimens of the various kingdoms, and concerns itself with the attraction that a higher kingdom of nature will have for the highest lives of the next lower kingdom. It governs the radioactivity of minerals, the radiations of the vegetable kingdom, and, curiously enough, the entire question of perfumes. Smell is the highest of the purely physical senses, so in the vegetable kingdom a certain series of perfumes are evidence of radiation in that kingdom. There is, moreover, an interesting link between those who are members of the fifth kingdom, the spiritual, and the vegetable, for in esotericism the two and the five, the sun and the sons of mind, are closely allied. It is not possible to indicate more, but it is not without significance that certain rays are, through the initiates and masters, represented by vegetable perfumes. It signifies radiation, and to those who have the key, reveals the quality of the egoic lotus and the place it holds in any particular planetary lotus, as well as a connection with certain devas who are the sevenfold life of the vegetable kingdom. We must not forget that man is occultly a seven-leaved plant, the Saptaparna, Saptaparna. This law, in a mysterious manner, inexplicable to those ignorant of the karma of our planetary locus, is not operative in the animal kingdom during this cycle or chain. One of the problems of the next chain will be the bringing in of animal radiation, thus offsetting the method of initiation now pursued. It must never be forgotten that the chain process of individualization and the earlier three initiations concern the animal kingdom, and man is viewed therein as an animal. In the final initiation, or the offering up of the entire bodily nature, this part of the general karma of the planetary logos and the life of the informing spirit of the animal kingdom become adjusted. Page 1171. If this is meditated upon, some light may be thrown upon the problem as to why the adepts of the left-hand path in Atlantean days were called the trees and were destroyed with the entire Atlantean vegetation. In the oldest of all the commentaries, the mystery is expressed thus, quote, "They, the adepts of the left-hand path, became thus separated through their own fault. Their smell rose not up to heaven. They refused to merge. No perfume was theirs. They hugged to their greedy bosoms all the gains of the flowering plant." Close quote. 6. The Law of the Lotus. This is the name given to the mysterious influence from the cosmic law of attraction which brought in the divine sons of mind and thus linked the two poles of spirit and matter, producing upon the plane of mind that which we call the egoic lotus, or the flower of the self. It is the law which enables the lotus to draw from the lower nature, the matter aspect and the water aspect, the moisture and heat necessary for its unfoldment, and to bring down from the levels of the spirit that which is to it what the rays of the sun are to the vegetable kingdom. It governs the process of petal unfoldment, and therefore itself demonstrates as a triple law: A, the law of solar heat, knowledge petals; B, the law of solar light, love petals; C, the law of solar fire, sacrifice petals. 7. The Law of Color. To get any comprehension of this law, students should remember that color serves a twofold purpose. It acts as a veil for that which lies behind, and is therefore attracted to the central spark. It demonstrates the attractive quality of the central life. Page 1172. All colors, therefore, are centers of attraction, are complementary, or are antipathetic to each other. And students who study along these lines can find out the law and comprehend its working through a realization of the purpose, the activity, and the relation of colors to or for each other. 8. The Law of Gravitation. This law is, for the non-occult student, the most puzzling and confusing of all the laws. It shows itself in one aspect as the power and the stronger urge that a more vital life may have upon the lesser, such as the power of the spirit of the earth, the planetary entity, not the planetary logos, to hold all physical forms to itself and prevent their scattering. This is due to the heavier vibration, the greater accumulative force, and the aggregated tamasic lives of the body of the planetary entity. This force works upon the negative or lowest aspect of all physical forms. The law of gravitation shows itself also in the response of the soul of all things to the greater soul, in which the lesser finds itself. This law, therefore, affects the two lowest forms of divine life, but not the highest. It emanates in the first instance from the physical sun and the heart of the sun. The final synthesizing forces, which might be regarded as forms of spiritual gravitational activity, are nevertheless not so, but are due to the working of another law, emanating from the central spiritual sun. The one is purely systemic, the other a cosmic law. 9. The Law of Planetary Affinity. This term is used in the occult teaching specifically in connection with the interaction of the planets with each other and their eventual marriage. As we know, the planetary schemes, the seven sacred planets, will eventually synthesize or absorb the life of the planets which are not termed sacred and the numerous planetoids as far as the four kingdoms of nature are concerned. Page 1173. The absorption of the spirit aspect proceeds under the law of synthesis. The minor four planetary schemes become first the two and then the one. This one, with the major three, forms a second and higher quaternary, which again repeats the process, producing from the four the two, and from the two the one. This final one is eventually merged in the sun, producing in this prolonged process and over a vast period of time the appearance of the seven suns who run together and thus blaze forth, producing one flaming ball of fire. On a lesser scale, the same law governs the merging of the chains in a scheme. 10. The law of solar union. When the interplay of the suns is being dealt with from the material aspect and from the consciousness aspect, this term is occultly used. It is not possible to enlarge upon it, but only to point out the universality of this law of attraction. 11. The law of the schools, the law of love and light. This is a mysterious term used to cover the law as it affects the expansions of consciousness which an initiate undergoes and his ability to attract to himself through knowledge, A, his own higher self so as to produce alignment and illumination, B, his guru, C, that which he seeks to know, D, that which he can utilize in his work of service, E, other souls with whom he can work. It will be evident, therefore, to the thoughtful student that this law of the schools is primarily applicable to all units of divine life who have arrived at or transcended the stage of self-consciousness. It has consequently a vital connection with the human kingdom, and there is an occult significance in the fact that this is the 11th law, page 1174. It is the law which enables a man to unite two of his aspects, the personal self and the higher self. It is the law which governs the transition of the human atom into another and a higher kingdom. It is the law which, when comprehended and conformed to, enables a man to enter into a new cycle. It is the law of the adept, of the master, and of the perfected man. For this reason, it might be of profit here if we dealt with it a little more fully than with the other laws, for mankind is now at the stage where a number of its units are ready to come under the specific influence of this law and thus be transferred out of the hall of learning via the hall of wisdom into the fifth or spiritual kingdom. This law of the schools does not specifically apply to the Deva evolution. They come under another law called the law of passive resistance, which does not concern us here, nor would it profit us to consider it. Three main groups of existences are controlled by it. 1. Human beings from the moment they tread the probationary path. 2. All the units of the fifth kingdom, therefore all the members of the hierarchy. 3. The planetary logoi throughout the system. It will be apparent, therefore, that this law concerns the great experiment which has been inaugurated on Earth by our planetary logos in connection with the process of initiation, and it has only held sway since the door of initiation was opened in Atlantean days. It does not, therefore, apply to all the members of the human family, some of whom will achieve slowly and under the sway of the basic law of evolution. It does not affect in any way, for instance, those members of the human family who have individualized on the earth chain through the fanning of the spark of mind, one of the methods employed by the Lords of the Flame, as earlier seen. Page 1175. It can be studied in two main divisions. First, in connection with the human units passing under hierarchical influence in the Hall of Wisdom, and also in connection with the various planetary schemes. Each scheme exists in order to teach a specific aspect of consciousness, and each planetary school or hierarchy subjects its pupils to this law only in manners diverse. These planetary schools are necessarily governed by certain factors, of which the two most important are the peculiar karma of the planetary logos concerned and his particular ray. It is not possible at this stage to convey to students the information as to the nature of each planetary school. They exist in five great groups. 1. The exoteric non-sacred planets, called in occult parlance the outer round or outer circle of initiates, Of these, our earth is one, but being aligned in a peculiar fashion with certain spheres on the inner round, a dual opportunity exists for mankind, which facilitates, whilst it complicates, the evolutionary process. 2. The sacred planets, called sometimes, when this law of the schools is under consideration, the seven grades of psychic knowledge, or the seven divisions of the field of knowledge. 3. The inner round, which carries with it vast opportunity for those who can surmount its problems and withstand its temptations. This inner round has a peculiar appeal to units on certain rays and has its own specific dangers. The inner round is the round that is followed by those who have passed through the human stage and have consciously developed the faculty of etheric living and can follow the etheric cycles, functioning consciously on the three higher etheric planes in all parts of the system. They have, for certain occult and specific purposes, broken the connection between the third etheric and the four lower subplanes of the physical plane. Page 1176. This round is followed only by a prepared percentage of humanity and is closely associated with a group who pass with facility and develop with equal facility on the three planets that make a triangle with the Earth, namely Mars, Mercury, and Earth. These three planets, in connection with this inner round, are considered only as existing in etheric matter, and, in relation to one of the heavenly men, hold a place analogous to the etheric triangle found in the human etheric body. I have here conveyed more than has as yet been exoterically communicated anent this inner round, and by the study of the human etheric triangle, its function, and the type of force which circulates around it, much may be deduced about the planetary inner round. We must bear in mind in this connection that just as the human etheric triangle is but the preparatory stage to a vast circulation within the sphere of the entire etheric body, so the etheric planetary triangle, passing from the Earth to Mars and Mercury, is but the preparatory circulatory system to a vaster round included within the sphere of influence of one planetary lord. 4. The circle of the planetoids. Students of the ageless wisdom are apt to forget that the life of the Logos manifests itself through those circling spheres which, though not large enough to be regarded as planets, pursue their orbital paths around the solar center and have their own evolutionary problems and are functioning as part of the solar body. They are informed, as are the planets, by a cosmic entity and are under the influence of the life impulses of the solar Logos, as are the greater bodies. The evolutions upon them are analogous to, though not identical with, those of our planet, and they swing through their cycles in the heavens under the same laws as do the greater planets. 5. The absorbing triangles. This term is applied to the evolutionary schools found located in the three major planets of our system, Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, and to those found in the three major chains and three major globes in a planetary scheme. Page 1177. The rulers of these planets, chains, and globes are called the Divine Examiners, and their work concerns the human kingdom specifically and entirely. They are responsible for the work of A. transferring men from one school to another and from one grade to another, B. for the expanding of the human consciousness under the law, C. for the transmutation of the forms of the human unit in the three worlds and the consequent negation of the form, D. for the radioactivity of the fourth kingdom in nature. We might regard the presiding lives in these departmental schools as the custodians of the path and responsible, therefore, for the divine pilgrim during the final stages of the treading of the path of evolution. They begin to work with men from the moment they first set foot upon the probationary path, and they continue their work until the seventh initiation is taken. The masters, therefore, who take pupils for training are numbered amongst them, whilst the masters who do not concern themselves with individuals and their development are not. It is not possible to give fully the types of schools and teaching which is given on the different planets, All that can be done is to give an occult phrase which will convey to the intuitive student the necessary hint. Planetary schools. Uranus, the school of magic of the 10th order. It is sometimes called the planet of the violet force, and its graduates wield the power of cosmic etheric prana. Page 1178. Earth, the school of magnetic response. Another name given to its pupils is the graduates of painful endeavor, or the adjudicators between the polar opposites. A further hint to be taken in connection with the two names above given is that its graduates are said to undergo examination upon the third subplane of the astral plane. Vulcan, the school for fiery stones. There is a curious connection between the human units who pass through its halls and the mineral kingdom. The human units on the Earth scheme are called, in mystical parlance, the living stones. On Vulcan, they are called fiery stones. Jupiter, the school of beneficent magicians. This planet is sometimes called, in the parlance of the schools, the College of Quadruple Force Units, for its members wield four kinds of force in constructive magical work. Another name given to its halls is the Palace of Opulence, for its graduates work with the law of supply and are frequently called the sowers. Mercury. The pupils in this planetary school are called the sons of aspiration, or the points of yellow life. They have a close connection with our Earth scheme, and the old commentary refers to this in the words, quote, "The points of golden flame merge and blend with the four-leafed plant of tender green and change its color to a tinge of autumn yellow. The four-leaved plant, through new and fresh inflow, becomes the plant with seven leaves and three white flowers." Close quote. Page 1179. Venus, the school with five strict grades. This again is a planetary scheme closely related to ours, but its planetary logos is in a more advanced group of students in the cosmic sense than is our planetary logos. Most of its hierarchical instructors come from the fifth cosmic plane and are a peculiar group of Manasa Devas of very exalted rank. They are each depicted in the archives of our hierarchy as holding a trident of fire surmounted by five green emeralds. Mars, the school for warriors, or the open grades for soldiers. Four of these planetary schools are responsible for the energy flowing through the foremost exponents of the four castes, and this not only in India, but in all parts of the world. Its teachers are spoken of as the graduates of the ruddy fire, and are frequently portrayed as clothed in red robes and carrying ebony wands. They work under the first aspect logoic and train those whose work is along the lines of the destroyer. Neptune. This school concerns itself with the development and fostering of the desire element, and its graduates are called the sons of Vishnu. Their symbol is a robe with a full-sailed boat portrayed over the heart, the significance of which will be apparent to those who have eyes to see. It is not permissible to touch upon the other planetary schools, nor would it profit. Certain further facts can be ascertained by the student of meditation who is aligned with his ego and in touch with his egoic group. Page 1180. The teaching given on our Earth scheme in the Hall of Wisdom has been dealt with in many occult books, including Initiation Human and Solar, and need not be enlarged upon here. Some of the aspects of this law are here indicated. The ground is by no means covered, but enough has been shown to indicate its magnitude and extent. In closing, it must be pointed out that the law of karma is, from some angles of vision, the sum total of this law of attraction, for it governs the relation of all forms to that which uses the form, and of all lives to each other. End of side one, cassette number 28, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1180. Continued on side two. Side two, cassette number 28, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section two, division F, The Law of Attraction, on page 1180. Students of the law of attraction must be careful to bear in mind certain things. These should be carefully considered and realized as the subject is studied. They must remember first that all these subsidiary laws are really only the manifestation of the one law, that they are but differentiated terms employed to express one great method of manifestation. Secondly, that all energy demonstrating in the solar system is, after all, the energy of the logoic physical permanent atom, having its nucleus on the atomic subplane of the cosmic physical. This physical permanent atom, as is the case with the corresponding atom of the incarnating jiva, has its place within the causal body of the logos on his own plane. It is therefore impressed by the totality of the force of the egoic cosmic lotus, or the attractive quality of cosmic love. This force is transmitted to the solar system in two ways: through the medium of the sun, which is in an occult sense the physical permanent atom. It therefore attracts and holds attracted all within its sphere of influence, thus producing the logoic physical body. Through the medium of the planes, which are the correspondences to the seven spirillae of the physical permanent atom of a human being. Thus, a dual type of attractive force is found, one basic and fundamental, the other more differentiated and secondary. Page 1181 is a chart entitled Ethereo-Atomic Philosophy of Force, taken from the Principles of Light and Color by Edwin D. Babbitt, New York, 1878. Page 1182. These streams of energy, judged by their effects, are called in human terminology laws, because their results are ever immutable and irresistible, and their effects remain unchangeably the same, varying only according to the form, which is the subject of the energic impulse. Thirdly, the student must bear in mind that the seven planes, or the seven spirillae of the logoic permanent atom, are not all equally vitalized by the attractive pull emanating from the logoic lotus via the heart of the sun. Five of them are more alive than the other two. These five do not include the highest and the lowest. The words, the heart of the sun, must be understood to mean more than a locality situated in the interior recesses of the solar body, and have reference to the nature of the solar sphere. This solar sphere is closely similar to the atom pictured in the book by Babbitt, and later in Occult Chemistry by Mrs. Besant. The sun is heart-shaped and, seen from cosmic angles, has a depression at what we might call its north pole. This is formed by the impact of logoic energy upon solar substance. This energy, which impinges upon the solar sphere and is thence distributed to all parts of the entire system, emanates from three cosmic centers and therefore is triple during this particular cycle. A, from the sevenfold Great Bear, B, from the sun Sirius, C, from the Pleiades. It must be remembered that the possible cosmic streams of energy available for use in our solar system are seven in number, of which three are major. These three vary during vast and incalculable cycles. Students may find it of use to remember that A, the law of economy demonstrates as an urge, B, the law of attraction as a pull, C, the law of synthesis as a tendency to concentrate at a center or to merge. Page 1183. The streams of energy which pour forth through the medium of the sun from the egoic lotus, and which are in reality logoic soul energy, attract to them that which is akin to them in vibration. This may sound rather like the statement of a platitude, but is susceptible of really deep significance to the student, being accountable for all systemic phenomena. These streams pass in different directions, and in the knowledge of occult direction comes knowledge of the various hierarchies of being and the secret of the esoteric symbols. The main stream of energy enters at the top depression in the solar sphere and passes through the entire ring-pass knot, bisecting it into two halves. with this dream enters that group of active lives whom we call the Lords of Karma. They preside over the attractive forces and distribute them justly. They enter, pass to the center of the sphere, and there, if I may so express it, locate and set up the holy temple of divine justice, sending out to the four quarters of the circle the four Maharajas, their representatives. So is the equal-armed cross formed, and all the wheels of energy set in motion. This is conditioned by the karmic seeds of an earlier system, and only that substance is utilized by the Logos, and only those lives come into manifestation who have set up a mutual attraction. These five streams of living energy, the One and the Four, are the basis of the onward march of all things. These are sometimes esoterically called the forward-moving lives. They embody the will of the Logos. It is the note they sound and the attractive pull which they initiate, which bring into contact with the solar sphere a group of existences whose mode of activity is spiral and not forward. These groups are seven in number and pass into manifestation through what is for them a great door of initiation. Page 1184. In some of the occult books, these seven groups are spoken of as the seven cosmic initiates who have passed within the heart and there remain until the test is passed. These are the seven hierarchies of beings, the seven Daihan Chohans. They spiral into manifestation, cutting across the fourfold cross and touching the cruciform stream of energy in certain places. The places where the streams of love energy cross the streams of will and karmic energy are mystically called the caves of dual light. And when a reincarnating or liberated jiva enters one of these caves in the course of his pilgrimage, he takes an initiation and passes on to a higher turn of the spiral. Another stream of energy follows a different route, which is a little difficult to make clear. This particular set of active lives enter the heart-shaped depression, pass around the edge of the ring pass knot to the lowest part of the solar sphere, and then mount upwards, coming into opposition, therefore, with the stream of downpouring energy. This stream of force is called lunar force, for lack of a better term. They form the body of the Raja Lord of each of the planes and are governed by the law of economy. All these streams of energy form geometrical designs of great beauty to the eye of the initiated seer. We have the transverse and bisecting lines, the seven lines of force which form the planes, and the seven spiraling lines, thus forming lines of systemic latitude and longitude, and their interplay and interaction produce a whole of wondrous beauty and design. When these are visualized in color and seen in their true radiance, it will be realized that the point of attainment of our solar Logos is very high, for the beauty of the Logoic soul is expressed by that which is seen. Page 1185. Roman numeral 2. The effects of the law of attraction. The law of attraction produces certain effects which it might profit us to touch upon here, provided we remember that only a few effects out of many possible are being considered. 1. Association. The first effect might be called association. Under this law, the karmic lords are enabled to bring together those lives, human, subhuman, and superhuman, which have earlier been associated and have therefore somewhat to work out. The seven heavenly men, for instance, are a few out of the great band of associated lives who have chosen to come into incarnation in this kalpa for purposes of mutual help and mutual correction. They are really destined to work together, but nevertheless on other cosmic planes have points of contact unknown to us. Under this attractive pull, the informing existences of the various kingdoms of nature are engaged in mutual interaction and thus swing into lesser but similar activity all the lives of these various bodies of manifestation. These lines of attraction are veiled in mystery, and all that it is possible to indicate is the karma of the Lord of the second or vegetable kingdom with the Lord of the fifth kingdom, and a close line of linking energy between the Lord of the mineral kingdom and the human. These points are only for reference to our own planetary scheme. The Lord of the moon chain and the Lord of our present animal kingdom are blood brothers, and in their relationship and the esoteric interference of the man of men, the human family personified, is hidden the mystery of present animal karma and the slaughter of animal forms, the terror of wild beasts, and the work of vivisectionists. Under this law, too, is found the path upon which men lift themselves out of the human state of consciousness into the divine. But on this there is no need to enlarge. Page 1186. 2. Form building. The second effect is form building. Upon this we will not enlarge at any length, as all that it is at present possible to impart anent this subject has already been given in this treatise and other works of a similar nature. It is the middle or second aspect which is ever responsible for the construction of a form around a central nucleus. Students would find it useful to study and meditate upon the appended tabulation of energy streams and their objectivizing through mutual interplay. The tabulation just mentioned is on page 1187 and is entitled Energies, and under the different subtitles of solar logos, planetary logos, man, planes, and atoms are five columns which are headed source, focal point, medium, type of energy, nature of fire. Solar logos. 1. Source causal body, focal point jewel, medium central spiritual sun, type of energy cosmic will, nature of fire, electric fire positive. 2. Causal body, lotus two petaled, heart of the sun, cosmic love the sun, solar fire, harmony equilibrium. 3. Physical plane nucleus, permanent atom, the physical sun, cosmic activity, universal mind, fire by friction, negative. Planetary logos. 1. Planetary causal body, jewel, heavenly man on his own plane, systemic will, electric fire, positive. 2. Planetary causal body, lotus, egoic groups, systemic love, solar fire, harmony, balance. 3. Physical plane nucleus, permanent atom, physical planet, systemic activity, fire by friction, negative. Man. 1. Human causal body, jewel, monad spirit, atma buddhi, electric fire, positive force. 2. Human causal body, lotus, solar angel, manasic ego, solar fire, equilibrizing force. 3. Plane nucleus, permanent atom, lunar angels, lower threefold man, fire by friction, negative. Planes. 1. Plane Raja Lord, a Deva hierarchy, atomic subplane, Fohatic, central fire, initiatory. 2. Plane Devas, centers, prana, solar energy, form building fire. 3. Elementals, elemental essence, molecular substance, lunar force, the mother's heat. Atoms. 1. Atom, nucleus, plane Deva, positive, electric. 2. Atomic unit of form, sphere, plane Devas, balancing, solar fire. 3. Electrons, nuclei, elementals, negative, fire by friction. Return to page 1186. As time goes on, science will become aware of the basic nature and fundamental accuracy of the method whereby every form can be divided into its three aspects and viewed as an entity energized by three types of force emanating from various points extraneous to the form under consideration. It can be considered also as expressing in some way or another, in its various parts, force or energy originating in the three forces of manifestation, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Where this is the case and the premise admitted, the entire outlook on life, on nature, medicine, and science, and on methods of construction or destruction will be changed. Things will be viewed as essential triplicities. Men will be regarded as a combination of energy units, and work with things and with men from the form aspect will be revolutionized. In the tabulation, much information is given anent the form-building aspects of energy and the law of attraction, as it shows itself in the working of the various groups of the army of the voice. It is this army which is responsible for the attraction, which is the medium of bringing together the material required by the free spirits in order to construct their bodies of manifestation. Page 1188. The vibration initiated by the sound, which is the expression of the law of synthesis, is succeeded by the voice or word, and that word, as it progresses outward from the center to the periphery, for occultly understood the word is spoken from the heart, becomes A. a phrase, B. phrases, C. sentences, D. speech, E. the myriad sounds of nature. Each of these terms can be explained in terms of attractive energy, and this attractive energy is likewise the demonstration of the life of an existence of some grade or other. God speaks, and the forms are made. This tabulation should form the basis of a complete phase of study along this line, and is one of the most basic given in this treatise. 3. Adaptation of the form to the life. This is the process of gradually providing forms which are due expressions of the indwelling consciousness, which is the great purpose of what we call Mother Nature. This she does, working under the law of attraction which we are considering. This law, therefore, governs two aspects of unfoldment, that which concerns the soul or consciousness aspect, and that relating to the spirit on its own plane. It is the cause of that continuous cycle of form-taking, of form utilization and of form rejection, which characterizes the incarnations of every kind and type of living being. The student should here remember that the existences who are the attractive force in manifestation, the Daihan Chohans, are 7 in number, and that, therefore, the quality of the vehicles which form their bodies will have the sevenfold variation according to the specific nature of the Lords of Life. Page 1189. The only way to arrive at a realization of the basic qualities of these planetary logoi is through a consideration of the energy emanating from them, and it is this which the true esoteric astrology will eventually reveal. The time is not yet. It will come when the scientific consideration of human magnetism, of the distinctions between the 7 types of men, and the nature of the ego is more truly followed. Then will be revealed the nature of planetary magnetism and the quality of any specific planetary soul as it is known through the aggregated nature of the men responsive to and exponents of any particular planetary ray. The mystery is increased by the fact that there are not only certain logoic qualities manifesting which are not included by the term sacred, but that there are numerous other aspects of what we might term secondary centers of fire, generated and making their presence felt. We have a correspondence to this in the fact that there are centers of energy in man which are not purely etheric centers, but are the product of the interaction of the etheric centers and certain forms of negative energy of the lowest kind. Such, for instance, is the heart. There is the heart center, one of the major centers on the etheric planes, but there is also the physical heart, which is an energy generator also. There are the lower organs of generation, which are equally a reflex product with an energy which is the resultant of the higher vibrations, yet which has a quality all its own. This has its correspondence in the solar system. Many are the lesser planets, and numerous are the planetoids, which have an energy or attractive quality all their own, and which, from the systemic standpoint, must be allowed for in the measuring of the attraction producing the forms of or upon any particular planet. As we know from a study of the secret doctrine, certain of the planetary logoi are pure and passionless, whilst others are still under the domination of desire and of passion. Page 1190. This quality of theirs necessarily attracts to them that which they need for the due expression of their life in any scheme, and controls the nature of those egoic groups who are, for them, generating force centers. Hence the nature of men upon earth. All human beings are paramountly governed by certain planetary attractions, impressions or influences, which might be enumerated in the order of their importance. There is, first of all, the attractive pull of the life of the planetary logos of this particular planet. This is necessarily the strongest and is one of the basic factors which have settled the lines the human form has taken upon this planet. There are human beings or exponents of self-consciousness on other planets, but the forms they utilize are not the same as ours. There is next the attractive pull of the planetary logos, who is the complementary life to that of our logos. This involves a planetary logos responsive to a vibration which harmonizes with that of our logos, but who, when in union with him, forms what might be called the third, or his dominant, as the case may be. It is not possible to reveal whether the blending of the note will mean that our scheme will absorb that which expresses the note of another scheme, or vice versa. It means that somewhere in the solar system is a planetary scheme of some kind, not necessarily one of the seven or of the ten, which has an interplay with ours, and which therefore inevitably affects the egoic groups. We must note also the fact that, in connection with the expression of a heavenly man, the egoic groups are energy centers and make his dense physical body eventually an accomplished fact. Finally, there is the attractive pull of that planetary scheme which is esoterically regarded as our polar opposite. What is here said has reference to the other schemes, for the law persists throughout the solar system. Page 1191. It will be apparent, therefore, that the real and esoteric astrology will deal with four kinds of force when it seeks to explain the nature of the energies which influence any human being. 1. The quality of the solar system. 2. The quality of the locus of the planet as it pours through the chains and globes and rounds in a sevenfold differentiation. 3. The quality of our Earth's complementary planet. 4. The quality of the attraction of our Earth's polar opposites. This involves information as yet veiled in deepest mystery, but which will unfold as the true psychology is studied, and which will eventually embody itself in a fourth fundamental of the secret doctrine, so that later students will have the three, as they are now found in the proem to that book, plus the fourth. This might be expected in this fourth round. The true astrology will reveal the nature of this fourth proposition at some later date. More attention will eventually be paid to the planetary influences and not so much to the signs of the zodiac where the nature of an ego is concerned. The great signs of the zodiac concern the heavenly man and necessarily, therefore, the monads of every human being. The planetary influences must be studied to find out the quality of a man's ray, and this in the above indicated threefold manner. Man is the monad, therefore he expresses a small part of his enfolding life. In this solar system, he is essentially the ego. Astrologers should study the planetary schemes in the light of the heavenly man, viewing them as an incarnation of a planetary logos, and thus strive to cast the horoscope of the planetary logos. Page 1192. They cannot succeed in doing so, but in the attempt may learn much and achieve new light upon a most difficult subject. In considering this question of the adaptation of the form to vibration, or the construction of a vehicle which will be a fitting instrument for spirit, The following factors must be borne in mind. 1. That it is the quality of the indwelling life which decides the type of form. 2. That these qualities are the sum total of the attributes of divinity which the indwelling life has succeeded in unfolding. 3. That these qualities, as may well be surmised, fall into the usual septennit. 4. That they fall also into two groups, those which concern the lower principles and are therefore four in number, and those which concern the higher and middle and are therefore three. This is true of all men, of the heavenly men, and of the solar logos likewise, and there is a mysterious analogy concerned in the manifestation of the three higher principles in man, which may be considered as demonstrating through the perfected adept, the bodhisattva, and the three higher principles of the solar logos, as they demonstrate through the major three aspects. They form but one principle, showing forth in three ways. So it is with the unmanifested monad, unmanifested from the standpoint of the lower man. That monad can, at a certain very advanced stage in evolution, and one far beyond that of the adept, have its triple simultaneous manifestation, and show forth as a master in the three worlds, as a bodhisattva on his own plane, and as the emancipated Dhyani Buddha. Yet these three will be but one, will be the result of a great spiritual vibration, and will perform the triple work which may, from the standpoint of the three worlds, appear as the work of three separate great existences. Page 1193. They are forms of three monadic vestures worn by the one monad, as a man wears his three bodies simultaneously and functions in them separately. Footnote: the three vestures. Quote, the stream is crossed. 'Tis true thou hast a right to Dharmakaya vesture, but Sambhogakaya is greater than a Nirvani, and greater still is a Nirmanakaya, the Buddha of compassion. Close quote. Voice of the Silence, page 97. Quote, the three Buddhic bodies or forms are styled Nirmanakaya, Sambhogakaya, Dharmakaya. The first is that ethereal form which one would assume when leaving his physical he would appear in his astral body, having in addition all the knowledge of an adept. The bodhisattva develops it in himself as he proceeds on the path. Having reached the goal and refused its fruition, he remains on earth as an adept. And when he dies, instead of going into nirvana, he remains in that glorious body he has woven for himself, invisible to uninitiated mankind, to watch over and protect it. Sambhogakaya is the same, but with the additional luster of three perfections, one of which is entire obliteration of all earthly concerns. The Dharmakaya body is that of complete Buddha, i.e. no body at all, but an ideal breath, consciousness merged in the universal consciousness, or soul devoid of every attribute. Once a Dharmakaya, an adept or Buddha, leaves behind every possible relation with or thought for this earth. Thus, to be enabled to help humanity, an adept who has won the right to nirvana renounces the Dharmakaya body in mystic parlance, keeps of the Sambhogakaya only the great and complete knowledge, and remains in his Nirmanakaya. The esoteric school teaches that Gautama Buddha, with several of his arhats, is such a Nirmanakaya, higher than whom, on account of his great renunciation and sacrifice for mankind, there is none known. Close quote. Voice of the Silence, page 98. Return to text. One or other of these three can, if so he will, occupy a body on the physical plane which will not be simply a created Maya Virupa. This is done in one of two ways, either through the occupancy of a willingly vacated body, as was the case when the Christ occupied the body of Jesus, or by a divine overshadowing of a disciple, as has been and will be the case. The quality of the form occupied or used and the nature of its work depends upon which of the three higher aspects of the initiating impulse is manifesting. Very rarely a more mysterious phenomenon occurs, and the overshadowing Buddha, bodhisattva, or adept, each makes his appearance upon earth, thus demonstrating the three aspects of knowledge, love, and will, and all taking form. Page 1194. This may seem to be a great complexity, but it is not so much stranger, after all, than the phenomenon of the monad in time and space and during evolution, demonstrating forth as the triad, the ego, and the personality. This type of triple avatar only makes its appearance under a peculiar series of cycles concerned with a group of monads who were the most progressed and advanced at the opening of the Maha Manvantara. As yet, there are not many progressed enough to do this triple work, the Buddha and nine others being the only ones as yet remaining in touch with our particular planet in this particular manner. A few are, as Christ is, and have the power to make a dual appearance. This type of monad is only found on rays 2, 4, 6. If the student bears in mind that the nature of the form is dependent upon the quality of the incarnating life, he will have also to bear in mind the distinctions between the various groups of hierarchies, for the lives in those groups are of a quality diverse to each other, and the forms through which they manifest are equally distinct and diverse. Therefore, we must distinguish between 1. The involutionary groups, 2. The evolutionary groups, 3. The seven groups of lives which we call the lunar fathers, A. 3 incorporeal, who are the elemental kingdoms, B. 4 material, who are the forms of the four kingdoms on the upward arc, 4. The seven hierarchies of lives, 5. The seven groups of solar angels. There must not be confusion as to the distinction between the hierarchies of beings and the seven rays, for though there is close connection, there is no resemblance. Page 1195. The rays are but the primordial forms of certain lives who carry in their hearts all the seeds of form. The hierarchies are the manifold groups of lives at all stages of unfoldment and growth who will use the forms. The rays are vehicles and are therefore negative receivers. The hierarchies are the users of the vehicles, and it is the nature of these lives and the quality of their vibration which, under this great law of attraction, brings to them the needed forms. These are the two primal distinctions, life and form, and these two are the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, in his form-building aspect. They are the builders and equally exist in three groups with their lesser differentiations. It is not necessary here to place these groups on certain planes in the solar system. These hierarchies of beings who come in on the ray of light from the center are the seeds of all that later is, and it is only as they pass out into manifestation and the forms which they are to occupy are gradually evolved that consideration of the planes becomes necessary. The planes are to certain of these hierarchies what the sheaths of the monad are to it. They are veils for the life indwelling. They are media of expression and exponents of force or energy of a specialized kind. The quality of a ray is dependent upon the quality of the hierarchy of beings who use it as a means of expression. Page 1196. These seven hierarchies are veiled by the rays, but each is found behind the veil of every ray, for in their totality they are the informing lives of every planetary scheme within the system. They are the life of all interplanetary space and the existences who are expressing themselves through the planetoids and all forms of lesser independent life than a planet. Let me briefly give certain hints concerning these hierarchies which may serve to elucidate that contained in the secret doctrine concerning them. What is here imparted is not in itself new, but is the synthesizing of much already known and its gathering together in the form of brief enunciated facts. Each of these seven hierarchies of beings who are the builders or the attractive agents are, in their degree, intermediaries. All embody one of the types of force emanating from the seven constellations. Their intermediary work, therefore, is dual. 1. They are the mediators between spirit and matter. 2. They are the transmitters of force from sources extraneous to the solar system to forms within the solar system. Each of these groups of beings is likewise septenary in nature, and the 49 fires of Brahma are the lowest manifestation of their fiery nature. Each group also may be regarded as fallen in the cosmic sense because involved in the building process, or the occupiers of forms of some degree of density or another. Hierarchy 1. The first great hierarchy is emanated from the heart of the central spiritual sun. It is the Son of God himself, the firstborn in a cosmic sense, even as the Christ was the eldest in a vast family of brothers, and the first flower on the human plant. Page 1197. The symbol of this hierarchy is the golden lotus with its 12 petals folded. It should be remembered that this hierarchy is literally the sixth, for five hierarchies have passed on, being the product of the earlier system, that wherein intelligence or manas was the goal. The five liberated hierarchies are, in their totality, the sum total of manas. It is the hierarchy which is the fifth in order, and which we are told is in process of achieving final liberation, or taking its fourth initiation, which is the cause of certain phenomena upon our planet, which has merited our planet being called the Star of Suffering. There is a karmic link between the animal kingdom and the fifth creative hierarchy of the earlier system, which makes itself felt in man in the necessary crucifixion of the animal physical nature, particularly along sex lines. We must remember that the hierarchies work under the law of attraction. It is the law of the builders. This first, sixth hierarchy has for its type of energy the first aspect of the sixth type of cosmic electricity and wields special power, therefore, in conjunction with the lowest fire, or fire by friction, as it makes itself felt on the sixth plane. These lives are called the burning sons of desire and were the sons of necessity. It is said of them in the old commentary, quote, they burn to know. They rushed into the spheres. They are the longing of the father for the mother. Hence do they suffer, burn, and long through the sixth sphere of sense. Close quote. Hierarchy 2. The second hierarchy is closely allied with the Great Bear. We are told that they entered through the second ventricle within the Sacred Heart and are, as we are told in the Secret Doctrine, the prototypes of the monads. They are the source of monadic life, but they are not the monads. They are far higher. Page 1198. This hierarchy, which is literally the seventh, is the influx into our system of those lives who, in the first solar system, remained on their own plane, being too sinless and holy to find opportunity in that very material and intellectual evolution. Even in this, they will find it impossible to do more than influence the incarnating jivas, imparting to them ability to realize the nature of group consciousness, the quality of the seven heavenly men, but not being able to express themselves fully. Some clue to this mystery will come if the student carefully bears in mind that in our solar system and our seven planes, we have only the physical body of the Logos, and that that physical body is a limitation of the expression of his threefold nature. The first, sixth, hierarchy might be viewed as endeavoring to express the mental vibration of the solar Logos, and the second, his emotional or cosmic astral nature. This second, or seventh, hierarchy has for its type of force the second aspect of the seventh type of force from out of the many. Some idea of the relative point in evolution of the solar Logos may be gained by study of the varying aspects of force which he is demonstrating in this particular incarnation. It is this energy which drives the monads through into physical incarnation, for it makes itself felt on the seventh plane. The energies which are functioning are those which the Logos has unfolded and are the gain of previous incarnations. Gaps necessarily occur and certain types of force are lacking because he has as yet much cosmically to gain. It is the energy of this hierarchy, whose numbers are 2 and 7, which results in the manifestation of the divine androgyny and in the 7 centers of force, which are the 7 spiritual energies. Hierarchy 3. The third creative hierarchy, or the 8th, is a peculiarly interesting one. They are called the triads, for they hold in themselves the potencies of triple evolution, mental, psychical, and spiritual. Page 1199. These triads of life are inherently the 3 persons and the flower of the earlier system from a certain angle. From another angle, when studied as the flower of the earlier 8, they are the 8-fold points awaiting opportunity to flame forth. They are the devas who are ready for service, which is to give to another hierarchy certain qualities which are lacking. This hierarchy is regarded as the great donors of immortality, whilst themselves standing aloof from incarnation. Lords of sacrifice and love are they, but they cannot pass out of the logoic etheric body into the dense physical vehicle. This third hierarchy wields the 3rd aspect of electric force of the 1st type of cosmic energy. They stand for a recurrent cycle of that 1st type symbolized by the number 8. The formulae for these electrical energies are too complicated to be given here, but the student should bear in mind that these hierarchies express 1. Septenary cosmic energy, 2. Cosmic prana, 3. Solar energy or electric fire, solar fire, and fire by friction. Each hierarchy manifests a triple energy, or an aspect of each of the above, and that necessitates a 9-fold differentiation, for the 2 first are triple, as is the 3rd. It is the rejection of the triadal lives by units in the 4th hierarchy, that of the human monads, which precipitates a man eventually into the 8th sphere. He refuses to become a Christ, a Savior, and remains self-centered. We have dealt with the 1st 3 hierarchies, which are regarded as ever seeing the face of the ruler of the deep, or as being so pure and holy that their forces are in realized contact with their emanating source. We now take up for brief consideration 2 hierarchies which closely concern ourselves, the human self-conscious entities. Page 1200. These 2 groups are literally 3, as the 5th hierarchy is a dual one, and it is this which has led to some confusion and is the occult significance behind the ill-omened number 13. They are the seekers of satisfaction and the cause of the 2nd fall into generation, the fact behind the taking of a lower nature by the ego. The 4th and the 5th hierarchies are the 9th and 10th, or the initiates and the perfect ones. All human beings, or imperishable jivas, are those who evolve through a graded series of initiations, either self-induced or brought about on our planet with extraneous aid. This they achieve through a marriage with the order next to them, the 5th. They are then completed or perfected, and it is owing to this occult fact that the 4th hierarchy is regarded as masculine and the 5th as feminine. Hierarchy 4. The 4th creative hierarchy is the group wherein the highest aspect of man, his Father in Heaven, finds place. These lives are the points of fire who must become the flame. This they do through the agency of the 5th hierarchy and the 4 wicks, or the 2 dual lower hierarchies. Thus it can be seen that where man is concerned, the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th hierarchies are, during the cycle of incarnation, his very self. They are the lords of sacrifice and lords of love, the flower of Atma Buddhi. End of side 2, cassette number 28, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1200. Continued on cassette number 29.